accession number 10421, reel 12.
Mr. Leslie Thornton, reel 12. We were talking about the special unit in Scotland, Mr. Thornton. What else happened up there?
Well, as you can imagine, this is not all together, and the type of work we were doing, occasionally we'd let off steam. You had to. And sometimes it was it'd finish up a joke, but other times, like this that I'm going to tell you about. When we promoted warrant officers, and the QMSI from the small arms school was promoted lieutenant, they sent a replacement up from the School of Infantry, small arms wing, to be overall charge of the instructors there. When he came, he was a chap about 40, prematurely grey, and he wasn't going to take part in any of the instruction, but he was put in charge of all our obstacle courses for the maintenance of them and the building of new ones, etc. And he started to build these obstacle courses, and of course we, as the instructors, had to go over them with the students. And we got a bit sick of him at times because he built these obstacle courses and some of them were really rough. So we used to say to him, well, you couldn't do these obstacle courses, but you couldn't ruffle him. He was a quiet chap, couldn't ruffle him, and he just used to let it run off him like water off a duck's back, and so, oh, I could do it, I could do it. So anyhow, there was one particular obstacle course. You went up, and you got to the top, and you jumped. It was 16 feet high. So you can imagine, it was as high as a house. And we had to jump this with rifles and kit. So after a rough day, tempers being a bit frayed, we all went to the sergeant's mess and we started with a few pints. He was amongst us. And Jack Young, who was a South Wales border instructor, about 6 foot, about 22 years of age, started to bait him in the sergeant's mess about this going over these optical courses. And of course, it got to him in the end. About midnight it was. And said, "Right, oh, I'll show you. Come on, and I'll." So they both went into the Nissen Hood. Both got their equipment on, and they started. And we set them off midnight. Up the ramp, the first jump, as I say, was about 16 foot high. Jack, the young one, was up, down, and away. Nixon, the QMSI, up to him, jumped, and never got up again. We sent for the ambulance. And off he went to hospital, and he came back about 3 weeks later in civilian clothes, medically discharged, unfit for service. Those are the kind of things that could happen. Another very sad one was we had a medical officer, captain, grand chap, all went out on exercises with the students and the instructors to see if anything happened. And he could fix it. And an ex-boxer, probably at college, and always loved to come in the sergeant's mess. But one particular night, there was some Queen's Alexandra nursing sisters came up to the camp to look round and go to the officer's mess, as they were officers, actually. And, of course, the doctor being the doctor, they sort of attached themselves to him. And he must have been drinking in the officer's mess, and he brought one of these nursing sisters down to the sergeant's mess. But he was drunk. He went up the bar, and I don't know what happened, We really don't know what happened, but the sergeant behind the bar was an old 14 war sergeant, Sergeant Mess Caterer. And the doctor, I picked a glass up, broke it on the counter. Yes. Anyhow, it's a good job with a good medical sergeant there. He saw the sergeant away and doctored him. But the medical officer was never told. The sergeant didn't tell anybody, and we didn't tell anybody. Because we knew that if we'd have told anybody, and he knew, we didn't know he'd done this, that he'd have lost his commission, he'd have lost his, he'd have been stuck up the regiment most likely, and we thought, if he was such a good chap, that if he had done it, he'd probably have shot himself or something like that. So that story stayed in the sergeant's mess and never got out. On a lighter thing, one Sunday, we looked over to the officers' mess, and there were all the officers on the Castle Green place where they lived. Obviously, they were a bit high-spirited, and they had the hose pipes out, the fire hoses, and they were throwing plates up and hosing the plates, and then they broke all the castle windows with the hose pipes. Well, there was nothing, not a lot said, but they were a lot out of pocket. The windows were put back, and the officers had to pay. But that's the kind of thing that happened under the circumstances and the conditions that we trained in. I think that's, gives an idea of the high space shot and sometimes you got fed up. On the course, officers' course, at one time, we had an officer from the Canadian Army and a sergeant from the Canadian Army. I remember this chap's name, Captain Ward. He was in my squad. We went on this exercise up the hills, and I was tagging behind, checking that they were going up and getting to where they were going. And I got up, and I found him sitting on a rock. He was a big, not a big chap, but a stocky build, maybe about 5'8", but very, very tough. And he was sitting on a rock, and I said, "What's the matter, sir?" He said, "I think I've got cramp." I said, "Well, the only way to do with that is get on your feet and get moving and to camp and wear it off." I thought he had the stitch, something like that. Anyhow, he made it back to camp, and he went straight into hospital with acute appendicitis. He came back a few days, later on, when he had the operation. Came to see me, thanked me for the course. We're nearly end of the course when this happened. Gave me 200 Canadian cigarettes and said, I went in hospital as an army officer and I'm out as a naval officer. On his operation, the cut, and he cut his navel out. But that's the type of officer you got during the war. They could make a joke of a thing like that. We were throwing grenades in the valley once, officers again, because sometimes the course was completely officers, no other ranks. And I was taking them and throwing grenades live. This particular day, it was wet, and I would go out with an officer where the throwing bay was. Well, it wasn't a bay, it was just in the open ground. And instruct him on throwing. This time this officer threw a grenade and it landed in the mud where I pointed to, and we got down and nothing happened. We waited 5 minutes, that's the time you're supposed to wait for the blind grenade, and I said, "Right, you'll have to go up now and find it." And I got up to go with him, walked along, and I heard this as it got down. Well, it was mud up to your knees, and we both got down. Seconds later, off it went. I hadn't heard that would have been full of shrapnel. But what had happened, that grenade obviously hadn't been cleaned properly, and the grease had kept the lever down, and when it went into the mud, it was growing slowly all the time. Until it released the firing pin, and then off it went. Oh, that was another lucky escape in throwing grenades. We also had the Canadian sergeant. Now, he was a lumberjack in civil life, and he gave demonstrations of chopping trees down. And we found out that an axe that we think that we in England that we used for chopping trees down, it was only a trimming axe. The axe that he used, only a small axe, about a two-foot handle and a smaller head. And he could have a tree down in minutes. And so he demonstrated all these points about wood and how to get down. This was the reason for this, was to make use of any wood that was needed for any reason when you were in action. Well, I think I've covered most of the things in Lock Islet now. Just one little thing that happened. Once a plane was circling, and obviously it was looking for something, and it landed in the valley. An Air Force officer with his plane landed in the valley. Force landing, of course. When he got out, his plane was full of whiskey. I don't know what happened to him, but I know that a big RAF truck had to come up the road to the Isles and take the plane away because it couldn't possibly get out the valley. So it was stripped down and loaded onto the truck and taken away. So whatever happened to him, I don't know. So that finishes that the place was going to wind up. And we wondered then what would happen to us all. The first one to go was a command officer. His name was Colonel Howard. He was a Somerset man. And he'd been a good CO, the last one that we had. And we gave him a send-off. He got in his car at the castle, and about 20 instructors piled on top of it, on the bonnets, on the roof. The driver couldn't see the road hardly, and drove him up to the station. Went up the railway track and stopped the engine. About 100 yards up the road, all piled on top of the engine, brought the engine in, put him in it, and off he went. I saw him about 7 years later. He was coming to command the Light Infantry Brigade Training Centre. And I had a squad that I was drilling on the square, ready for the Prime Minister to come, who was Clement Attlee at the time. And Colonel Howard was just looking on. He hadn't taken over. He dashed straight across, past the Prime Minister, said, "Thornton," shook my hand, and he straight away remembered me from Lock Islet. But an amazing thing was coming straight across and ignoring everybody else, wigs, and shaking hands with the Sergeant Major. And that was the highlights of Lock Islet.
About what time is this that the breakup came?
This was about June, July 1942.
So you'd been there how long?
2 years.
What was to happen next then when the breakup came?
Well,
were you posted?
Or? Yes, we were all posted to various places. Now I was posted to Achnacarry, which was the commando depot, where the instructors there had been trained by us. And they were going through the same kind of stuff that we were going, that we did. The commanding officer sent for me and said that I could stay at commando depot providing I came down in rank. This I was not prepared to do. So I said, no, sir, I won't do that. I said, I trained some of your instructors, and I'm sure I'm not coming down in rank to be either lower than them or on equal terms with them. So I wish to return to my unit. While I was there, one thing that was really bad, there was a terrific explosion one day, and we went dashed outside, and the ammunition hut had blown up. This was the first time I'd seen a man blown to bits. The storeman was inside the hood, and he was blown to small pieces, and it was a very nasty task to gather up his remains and sort them out into onto various stretchers, ready to be taken away. And the Nissen hut was just like torn apart. That was only the only thing there, because I wasn't there very long, only a couple of weeks.
Did you feel upset by this particular?
Well, anybody would really to look at. I mean, there was one leg on the ground with all the thigh. The boot was on it, all the thigh ripped to shreds, and you know, blood. And his inside was on the side of a truck that had been parked outside.
But you found you could do it. But however unpleasant, you still found you could.
Yes,
do it.
That was it. It had to be done, you see. But it was a very, very. I wasn't sick, but you know, I felt a little bit sick to look at it.
So anyway, you were there just about 2 weeks, did you?
That's think? All, yes. And then I asked to be returned to my unit, and off I went back to Brandsmouth.
Now, at Brandsmouth, which unit did you join?
Well, it was then, when I got to Brandsmouth, I found an entirely different. A new camp, a new large camp had been built, and it was number 4 ITC. It had two regiments there, the Duke of Wellington's and the DLI. I was put in charge of holding company, which dealt with all the men coming from abroad, ready to be posted in another place or going abroad. Probably held about 2,000 men. Now, the thing was that I had never been a company sergeant major. I'd been a QMSI, an instructor. And this kind of work as a company sergeant major is quite new to me, so I had to start and learn the job of being a company sergeant major instead of an instructor. And I had to rely mostly on the company clerks to put in the picture about various things until I got to know the routine of being a company sergeant major.
Which company at the infantry training centre was this? Which particular company was yours?
Holding company. You see, there were training companies, headquarter company, and this one was a holding company to deal with all your comings and goings.
Did you find that they received you all right after your experience?
Well, I went into the sergeant's mess, and in there I saw my school friend who lived at the same town and went to school with me, sat in the same desk, who'd been wounded in North Africa. And he looked at me and said, "God, what an officer." He was a sergeant. See? And as I mentioned once before, that the promotion I got had nothing to do with regiment. So, and in the meantime, I'd become a substantive warrant officer after 9 months. And my rank couldn't be taken away from me. So I had to knuckle down then and get cracking on the knowledge of the other job.
Do you recall the date that you arrived at Brandsmouth?
Let's see. I should think it's about middle of August. I can't give a date. About the middle of August. But I wasn't there very long. One day, a couple of colonels came up looking for men for the battalion. One was Colonel Peter Jeffries. He sent for me and questioned me where I'd been and whatnot, and said, "You for me." The other colonel didn't get a chance. Colonel said, "You for me." Being young, being used to all this training, he said, "You coming with me to the Young Soldiers Battalion at Barnard Castle."
Do you recall just how long you were there with the Infantry Training Centre?
A month, at the most. I didn't like it. You can imagine I didn't like it after the training I'd been doing, and now I had to sit at the desk and do all sorts of forms, about 10 feet long, of all the people that came in, where they'd come from, and all that business. So I wasn't very happy about that.
So you weren't involved in much of the training side of
it? No, none at all.
So a month later, you move on to?
Off I went to Westwick Camp in Barnard Castle to take over a company of young soldiers.
And that battalion was called?
That was the 70th Young Soldiers Battalion.
Now, How was that constituted? Young soldiers, what age limit?
They were 18 year old, 17, probably some of them, 18. I had one that was 16. Probably a false age, he'd given a false age. I knew he was 16. And they were lads, some of them from Borstal, places like that, and these special schools. And the battalion was formed at here, at Aycliffe. Well, school at Aycliffe, actually. It was formed, and I think the colonel, the first colonel, was Colonel MacBain, who had been my company commander years before. And he, of course, was went to another, I think he went then to command the 4ITC, where I just left, and Colonel Jeffries took his job.
Can you tell me a little bit more about the way the unit was constituted? Yeah. Were these young soldiers conscripted or regulars or what have you?
Well, some of them came from Borstals, I think, and were sort of conscripted maybe for the duration of the war. I don't know how many were regulars, but there were a few. But as I said, it's a long time ago, and I can't really tell you a great deal about their backgrounds or anything like that.
When you went to Barnet Castle, where was the camp in Barnet Castle?
It was a camp called Westwood Camp. It wasn't on the main road to Darlington. It was on the road, another road, sort of opposite over the fields. So that if you wanted to go to Darlington, you had to cross the fields to get on the road to Darlington.
What kind of accommodation was there?
A hutted camp. Most of them were hutted camps, with a few Nissen huts for stores and things built as well.
And within the huts themselves, how many men were in one hut? Average?
There'd be about 30 men in a hut. When I went there, of course, I was given a company straight away, and I was given C Company. My colour sergeant was an old soldier who joined just after the 14 War. And most of the sergeant majors were getting on. So you can imagine I was there then, the youngest sergeant major in that unit. As a matter of fact, I was probably the youngest sergeant major in any unit I went to, because I was only about 25 then. And I then had the same problem. I had to start teach myself the job of company sergeant major in an ordinary company, making out charge sheets, minor offence reports, and things like that, and reading up my manual of military law, and Queen's regulations, or King's regulations as it was then, and various other jobs of a company sergeant major in a company.
Did these young soldiers come to you direct from Civvy Street?
I didn't see any direct from Civvy, because the battalion had been formed before I joined it.
And the training that they were involved in, was it recruit training initially?
No, this they would be trained at another place. This battalion got all the training they needed, because they were a demonstration battalion to the School of Infantry, doing all the demonstrations of battle assaults, attacks on various things, firepower, at a place called Battle Hill mostly, where we used to go in trucks and lay these demonstrations on for officers who attended courses at the School of Infantry.
So that you demonstrated to other officers, as you say, who came to see you.
Mm-hmm.
Go on.
Yes, and of course, you would often see a squad or a platoon of German soldiers marching along the road. Those were 70th Battalion young soldiers dressed up in German uniforms, where again they were doing that for a demonstration for officers again.
Just before we go on to the kind of training that you were involved in and demonstrations you were involved in, how did you find these young men from the point of view of their quality?
Well, very good. Very good indeed. You got the odd a bad lad going absent, etc. But they'd been under two good commanding officers, Colonel McBain and Colonel Jeffries, who knew how to handle men, and their discipline was quite good. They got punished if they did anything wrong, naturally. But they got their weekends off, which suited them very well. They often used to go. They could go to Barnet Castle. Things in my mind went very well. We hadn't a great lot of trouble with them.
And duties, did they do the normal type of duty in a battalion and company?
They did their guards, their fatigues, their fire pickets, and things like that. We did a bit of drill, but there wasn't a lot of space for it. We hadn't a big square, anything like that, so drill was probably done on a Saturday morning with the RSM, going to another camp where there's a big square. There was Humbleton Camp, there was Westwood Camp, and there was Stafford Camp. A few camps then, we'd go where there's plenty of room, the RSM would take a drill parade. But you can see that they weren't concerned greatly with drill. It was the training part and the demonstrations for these School of Infantry that were the main object.
What about recreation?
Well, there was plenty of recreation. We had the field where they could hold the sports. We weren't there very long, see, so we didn't have a great length of. You only have to sports once a year, really, your main sports program. But you had your football and various other sports. You had your gymnasium. And
did your sports take you to outside the camp to play against local teams?
Mostly the boxers. We used to go down to box against the. There was a tank regiment there, which was just over the border of Barnet Castle, over the bridge of Barnet Castle. I think that was the part that was in Yorkshire. And we had a good boxing team. And one day this regiment came to our camp to do the boxing, this boxing match. And they had 2,000 men in their camp, and we had about 500, 600. And we staged this and the DLI won by 7 knockouts and 3 on points. They won all the 10 points. So you can see what kind of battalion it was.
So they're pretty fit young men.
Yeah, oh yes, yes, they were. Yeah.
What about the relationships with the civilians in the area?
Did well,
you have contact much with them?
Not a lot. We used to go down town at weekends, and then maybe the odd lad who liked his pint would go down during the week. But we didn't go out a lot. I didn't go out a lot. The sergeant's mess was there, and our party as a sergeant was never go out drinking in the town. The sergeant's mess was the place where you could drink and not cause any trouble, which was a good thing. Not get mixed up with the men. So if you went to town, you got mixed up with the men in pubs, and it could sort of cause a little bit of trouble, because if they were out of order, you'd have to put them in close arrest or something like that, and it's best left alone to their own devices. And if they cause any trouble, then the military police picked them up, and that was it.